Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague, Peter Flaherty. And we are here just a couple days before opening day as we record this. It is an exciting time in the college baseball world as we have finally just about reached the games. The long offseason is over, and we are very excited to finally be able to actually talk about some baseball that is going to be played this weekend, Peter. It's I've been saying it's hard to believe it's here, but you know, that's just kind of my stock answer. On the other hand, like, I'm ready for it. Like, we've been doing preseason content for the last couple months, and eventually you just get sick of that, and so now to be able to transition from talking about what might happen to talking about some actual baseball is a great place to be.
Yeah, like you, I've had the itch, like a huge itch for the last probably 2.5-3 months, really, when the MLB season ended and you're kind of baseball-less. And I was like, man, what am I going to do with my life? So I've been itching for it to come back. And then when I woke up on Monday, I think it really hit me because we were done with all of our college preview content. And it's like, whoa, like we've got college baseball this week, at least at the Division I level. So I am beyond fired up. We were talking about it before we hopped on. I guess it's a good, not great slate, but you brought up a great point where it's opening day. I don't think anyone really cares about the matchups. They just care that a ton of baseball is going to be played. So really looking forward to this weekend.
Yeah, it's a good thing that this is opening weekend, because I got to say, when you look out at the schedule, it's not like if this was what they gave us for week six or something, I would be like, this is not great, you guys. Just in terms of, we don't have a whole lot of ranked matchups, and like even the tournaments this year are good, not great. Like, I don't know if we'll ever see a tournament like the 2021 kickoff in Arlington when like the six teams were all in the top 20 or whatever, but we don't have anything like that this year. But what we do have, I think, is a lot of intriguing matchups. I think we have, you know, even if the highest level teams, you know, the top 10 type teams aren't playing each other or aren't really playing ranked teams this weekend, that's fine. Like, we'll get those teams later. I do think this is a pretty intriguing weekend for some teams that I just want to learn more about. And so obviously opening weekend is a great place to start with that. So Peter and I are going to get into some of these games, these series, tournaments to watch this weekend here on the podcast. But first, we want to touch on a little bit of news that broke late Tuesday night on the East Coast. And that is that Stanford secured the commitment of Japanese slugger Rintaro Sasaki. Sasaki is a 2024 high school graduate. He is from Japan. He is from Shohei Ohtani's alma mater in Japan. And he is a completely unique prospect for college baseball. He was a guy that, you know, I'm not like, I'm no NPB draft expert, but from what I understand, he was the projected favorite, or certainly in the mix to be the number one draft pick in Japan had he elected to stay and play professionally in his home country. Instead, last fall, he made the decision to forego the draft, decided he wanted to play college baseball in America, setting off, again, a unique recruitment. There's really never been a player like him to come to the States directly for college. There are Japanese players in college baseball, Riku Nishida for Oregon last year, Joy Ayama at UC Irvine this year. Those guys both started at junior colleges, though, and just were not prospects at the level of Sasaki, who set the Japanese high school home run record. He hit 140 home runs in high school. So schools wanted him. Like this was an elite recruit who presents unique circumstances as an international student, somebody who, from my understanding, as he started his recruitment, like, just didn't know a whole lot about college baseball and the whole process, understandably so. Reportedly, the final four teams he was considering, Vanderbilt, Stanford, Cal, and UCLA. And from my understanding, pretty much he was interested in like elite academics and elite baseball. And Stanford's a pretty good place to go for those. And in getting Sasaki, Stanford is getting an incredible power hitter that they can expect to plug into their lineup in 2025. He graduates in March. He will enroll at Stanford because they're on the quarter system in April, but he will not play this spring. He's going to be a freshman next spring again in 2025.
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge, literally and figuratively, get for the Cardinal. I mean, he's drawn body comps and play style comps to Prince Fielder, and rightfully so. You mentioned he hit a Japanese high school record, 140 home runs. It's top of the scale raw power. He's going to be an immediate impact bat next year for the Cardinal. And it was a trailblazing get. You mentioned Riku Nishita and Joe Oyama as Japanese natives who have taken their talents to the States, but they started at Merced, and I'm blanking on Riku's junior college right now, but Itsuki Takamoto at Hawaii.
I think it was Mount Hood.
Yes, Mount Hood. Good call. Itsuki Takamoto at University of Hawaii is also a Japan native and came over to play in the States. So I think that Sasaki might be second on that front. But again, an exciting get. I'm really excited to watch him play selfishly. I think I wouldn't be shocked this summer. I don't want to speculate if he played maybe in the West Coast League, which is where Stanford does send some of their incoming freshmen, even though Sasaki will have already started to take courses at Stanford. I wouldn't be shocked if they try and get his feet wet a little bit and get him some at-bats in the West Coast League, where incoming collegiate freshmen are allowed to play. So there's a chance he might play stateside this summer.
Yeah, that would be intriguing. I had not even stopped to consider that as an option. Famously, Travis Bazana, Australian native, coming to Oregon State, started in the West Coast League. He played before his freshman season there, and he played rather well. he set some West Coast League records. So, you know, like, and there are plenty of incoming freshmen that play in that league every year. And so, yeah, that's a possibility. Anything feels like a possibility with Sasaki right now. And I mean, it's just really exciting that he is pursuing this path. I have no idea if this is going to be the start of a trend. If it goes well, I'm sure some players will be interested. However, financially, like the better decision, but you can make, as a Japanese player, if you can make more money staying in Japan and playing professionally there until you're 25 and you get posted and then you come to MLB. Like, that is the path to the most money. You have to want to play American college baseball. You have to want to get into the Major League Baseball draft and minor league system as a younger player. Obviously, not everybody is the same. Like, Shohei Ohtani came before most people would have, again, because financially, if he'd stayed in Japan longer, he could have made more money. Obviously, that's worked out for him just fine. So everyone is going to approach things a little bit differently. But I don't want to, like, even if this goes great, other players may not make the same decision. But I think this is an outstanding development. Obviously, it's huge for Stanford. I think it's big for Stanford, the university, even. You know, when Japanese players come to Major League Baseball, we see incredible amounts of attention paid to them back in Japan. Like, a lot of media come and follow those players around playing Major League Baseball. And I'm not suggesting that anybody is going to suddenly become a Stanford beat writer because of it. But I do think that there will be more attention paid. And I don't think Stanford needs to, like, build its global presence. Like, pretty sure Stanford is doing just fine from that standpoint. However, I like the added attention can't hurt. Like, I do think that there's going to be a greater spotlight on, obviously, on the baseball team, but also on the university as a whole in Japan as a result of this.
Yeah, you hit on it perfectly. It's kind of a one of one scenario. We mentioned again, Itsuki Takamoto had a similar path, but the caliber prospect that Sasaki is, this is uncharted territory for really everyone. So I'm excited to see how it plays out. And that's a great point too about the Japanese media, because again, there'll be all eyes both stateside and internationally, especially in 2025, 2026, and 2027 on Stanford. And he's going to be, I think, you know, thrown right into the fire. I think he's going to be an everyday starter for him, whether it be at first base or DH. And he's going to be a hugely impactful bat, I think. So I'm already excited for his debut.
Yeah, I would expect him to go right into the lineup. Stanford does not shy away from playing freshmen. Part of that is a little bit because they have to. Stanford works with some pretty severe university limitations on, you know, recruiting class size and roster size and everything. So, you know, if they bring you in, they need you. You know, it's not like they're only bringing in five players a class, but they are going to use him right away, you know, just like you saw them use Malcolm Moore right away. And I think he can be that kind of player. Like, he's not a catcher, but just in terms of the impact Malcolm Moore had last year on Stanford, I mean, that's what you're hoping for out of Sasaki.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%.
All righty, so that's enough about a player who will not play college baseball this spring. But I'm excited. And it's going to be a great thing to follow for the next few years. But let's shift gears to opening day, which is just a couple days away now. Like I said, there's not like a massive series this weekend. We don't have that kind of thing on the calendar. So Peter, let's start instead. Let's just go to the Baseball at the Beach tournament hosted by Coastal Carolina. I am intrigued by this. It is Coastal, Indiana, Duke, and George Mason. So that's four teams that were in regional finals last year. It will be the reason why we're starting here is, first of all, that, like, I think that's interesting. But also, this is going to be the first game of the day, provided weather, provided whatever, will be Indiana and Duke in Myrtle Beach, or in Conway, at 11 a.m. And Peter, like you said, like, what a way to start the college baseball season. Indiana just on the outside of the top 25, Duke coming off of a super regional appearance in the preseason rankings. You know, as these things go, like, this is a pretty strong start to the season.
It's about as loud a matchup as you can get to start off the season. Duke and Indiana are two teams that I think have Omaha type ceilings should it all come together for them. And there's no shortage of star power on either side. Duke, I assume, will throw prize left-hander Jonathan Santucci. And then Indiana's lineup is really, really good with Big Ten Player of the Year, preseason Big Ten Player of the Year, and defending Big Ten Freshman of the Year, Devin Taylor at the top. Carter Matheson, Tyler Cerny. These two teams can really, really play. And I know that, unfortunately, Indiana will be without Luke Sennard all of this year. He went down with Tommy John surgery. He would have gotten the ball today, but I will be very much locked into this matchup because I'm really interested to see how Duke's offense looks. I think that's the one question mark that I have with them, because I have no doubt that they're going to be able to pitch and their pitching is going to be able to keep them in every single game. I just am curious to see where that run production comes from. I know that they're going to get or expecting immediate contributions from a couple of young freshmen and Kyle Johnson and Macon Winslow. But outside of that, I think Harvard transfer infielder Logan Bravo has emerged as a middle of the order bat, kind of their, what's become their trademark in the last few years, that Ivy League transfer that is a high impact middle of the order bat for him. But I'm very, very excited. And I think it's going to be a good early litmus test for both of these clubs. And looking at the slate, you know, throughout the weekend at the Baseball at the Beach, like, Indiana gets cut, like, it is a really difficult way to start the season for all these clubs, and one of them, maybe two, will come out of it with a really quality two, maybe even three win weekend.
Yeah, it is important to note that somebody here is going to go 1-2, and somebody might go 0-3. That's just the way this is going to be. But whoever it is should not be terribly concerned. Maybe if it's Coastal, I would be a little concerned, just them being at home. But the rest of those teams, I wouldn't worry too much no matter what happens this weekend. I do kind of feel good about Indiana in this setting. They, you know, Springsbrook Stadium plays offensive. Now it's so early and it will be cold still in Myrtle that maybe it won't play as offensive, and maybe that'll be better for Duke and worse for Indiana and Coastal. Indiana and Coastal both have some things to figure out on the mound. Coastal lost Coastal wasn't good to begin with, pitching wise last year. They were bottom half of the country in team ERA, and still did what they did last season. So, you know, it's not like they need to be elite, as a pitching staff, but you know, they're looking for new players to step up. IU without Sinard, is looking for some new guys to step up. So, potentially a tough environment to do that at Springsbrooks, but on the other hand, if you're a really offensive team at Springsbrooks, like that can really play in your favor. Duke, you know, is like you said, like their offense is going to be a little different. No Alex Mooney at shortstop. That's something to watch this year, just kind of how that stuff works out. But Santucci coming off of injury a season ago, there are going to be a lot of eyes on him. He's a potential first round pick, so everyone's going to be very interested in how that looks like in his first outing of the season.
Yeah, and the Duke rotation in general, I'm interested to see how it looks, because presumably it's going to be Santucci and Healy, maybe not 1-2, but at least 2/3 of the weekend rotation. Then I'm curious what ends up happening in that third spot if someone like Fran O'Shell does step into the third starter spot, which I don't quite know if he will, or if they opt for someone else. I know Jackson Emis had a really good fall, but regardless, there is no shortage of pitching talent for the Blue Devils. And then, not to give them the short stick, I know that Coastal, Indiana, and Duke are the three heavyweights in here, but George Mason is a sneaky team of their own. They've got, again, I mean, they could, it's going to be tough because they open up with Coastal at their home stadium, and you know, Coastal can really, really swing it. But Chad Gartland's a really quality arm that they have. He's their top returning pitcher. They've also got Connor Eaton is another guy that I like. The back of the baseball card is modest, but he's a legitimate prospect as well. I just don't know if they're going to be able to hit enough to keep up with Coastal, at least early on. But it would not totally shock me if they stole one from someone this weekend.
I mean, I know Mason is very excited about what they've got coming into the season. They're coming off of an NCAA tournament appearance that, like I said, pushed all the way into the regional finals in the Winston-Salem last year. That was a bit of a surprise, and you know, weird things happened after some rain delays there, and super late night for Maryland in the winner's bracket game, and all of a sudden, like, you lose that, and then you wake up the next day. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Mason, but they are expected to contend right at the top of the A-10 again this year. And, you know, I would peg them as conference favorites. So, you know, if you're looking at this as a Coastal, Duke, or Indiana fan and saying, well, like, two games are going to be tough, and then we got George Mason, like, that is not the case. They are battle tested. And they have some talented players of their own. So definitely a team to watch out for this weekend. And like you said, Peter, don't be surprised if they steal a game or maybe even two this weekend. All right, let's move on to what is now called the Shriners Hospital for Children College Classic Showdown, whatever they're calling it now. Previously, that tournament was in Houston. Shriners moved their sponsorship from Houston. That tournament, held by the Astros in the third weekend of the year, to the tournament held at the Rangers Stadium in Arlington opening weekend. So that's what's happening here. It's the college opening showdown that we've come to know over the last few years, just with a new sponsor at the front end. Anyway, this weekend they've got Nebraska, Baylor, Oregon, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Texas Tech. The headlining game is Tennessee and Texas Tech Friday night. Some intriguing teams in there overall. Nebraska looking to improve on a disappointing season last year. They got off to a slow start, never really bounced back from it in terms of RPI, but did finish solidly in the Big Ten. They finished fourth. Oregon coming off of that super regional appearance and the heartbreak of missing out on Omaha. Oklahoma, of course, is coming off of an NCAA tournament appearance, looking for a little bit more consistency. They too had a slow start in 2023. And then Tennessee and Texas Tech, that is a top 25 showdown. And I guess that's where we should focus here, Peter, is on that matchup. A lot of new on both rosters, a lot of power on the mound for both teams. And I mean, that could be a really fun one on Friday night.
Yeah, I think the field in general, it's an intriguing one, but this is the game that sticks out like a sore thumb in terms of excitement, is the one on Friday night with Tennessee and Texas Tech. Tennessee has just announced that they're going to be rolling with sophomore A.J. Russell on the mound on Friday nights, at least to start, which isn't, I think, in my mind, a total shock. He had a really good true freshman season, pitched his way to an ERA under one across a little bit over 30 innings, but
let me interject here. It is a little bit of a shock because they have preseason All-American Drew Beam, and I have not heard Tony Vitello explain his reasoning yet, but I am willing to bet here that some of this is a little bit of the start with the guy that you're not sure, like put Beam on Saturday, you know what you're going to get out of Beam, put Russell on Friday, and then have your full bullpen to complement him, then have Beam, the guy that you know can go six, seven, eight innings, and then reset the bullpen for Sundays. I think what's happening here, but we'll see how they manage it.
I was going to say that's better said. It's a more of a chess, not checkers type of move. Like, I wouldn't look into it as a ding or a not an endorsement of Drew Beam is more what I'm saying. But anyways, with the Vols, it's a new look. They'll have Cannon Peebles behind the plate, who was an NC State transfer. He had over 350 last year with 50 RBIs, led the Wolfpack in hitting, and they have one of the most prolific power hitters at first with Blake Burke and no shortage of star power up the middle. With Chris Moore, who will be manning second, and then they brought in Clemson transfer Billy Amick to hold down third. And I'm really excited. One pick to click for me, and I think is a popular one in the college baseball world, is sophomore outfielder Dylan Drying. He had a solid freshman year. He had just a tick under 300 with 7 home runs. Super strong kid, really good approach. I think that there's plenty of power and untapped power in the bat. I think he's got 15 plus home run type of outside type of upside. And then I think getting Hunter Ensley back in the outfield is huge, both from adding depth to the lineup, but also from an experience standpoint. We talk about, I know in our first episode of this year, we talked about a lot of the College World Series teams from last year needing to replace leadership. And I think that Ensley is a team captain type of guy, a de facto captain for him. Same with someone like Kirby Connell, that I think provide a lot of value beyond just inside the white lines. And then I'm a fan of the rotation, however it ends up shaking out with Beam, Russell, and presumably AJ Causey from Jacksonville State. That's a really good trio of arms that they've got, and they've got serious firepower in the back end of the bullpen. But Texas Tech is a hugely offensive team. They have a really dynamic duo in the middle of the order with Kevin Bazell and Gavin Cash. Cash has huge power from the left side, and I think Bazell, for my money's worth, is one of the more underrated hitters in this year's draft class. He's got a super advanced field to hit, great feel for the barrel. That's a pretty vaunted duo there. There'll be some new faces for Tech as well. Landon Stripling, freshman second baseman, I think he'll contribute right away. And Gage Harrelson's a fun player in center field, but similar on a much different scale than this, than George Mason keeping up with a team like Coastal. I'm not sure if Tech necessarily has the firepower to keep up with Tennessee. It's going to be a great game. I would
just be hard pressed to bet against the Vols here.
I think that's fair. They have like they have a lot going for them right now. The thing about Tech is they are hungry right now. I've seen some, you know, they got picked fourth in the preseason Big 12 poll, and Tim Tadlock, I saw some quotes from him about how, you know, they hadn't been picked that low in the Big 12 preseason poll for a few years, and the Red Raiders took notice that that's the perception of where they're at. And I think we picked them third in the Big 12. So, you know, it's not like we're so much ahead of where everyone else is, but I think they can make some noise. I don't know if this first game against Tennessee is the place for it. That being said, Tennessee, of course, last year, very notably, did not start hot. They started with a couple tough losses in Arizona in their tournament a weekend or a year ago. So bringing everybody together, it took some time in Knoxville last year. And how quickly do they gel this year is something to watch. Elsewhere in that tournament, Oregon is really intriguing to me. I genuinely don't know what to make of them. they were really good a lot of last year. They came so close to making it to Omaha. They now have to replace an awful, awful lot. So I look forward to learning about Oregon this weekend. And I think that Oklahoma is, I guess a pick to click this weekend. Like I think that Oklahoma could have a nice weekend, open some eyes with what the Sooners could put together this weekend in Arlington.
I was going to say, if there is one team in this field that could kind of surprise everyone and, you know, maybe even pull off a surprise sweep or win a really good 2 out of 3 games, it's the Sooners. I know they took a little bit of a step back last year after a really special 2022 season, but I like a lot of the returning talent that they have and some of the new faces that they brought in that are going to be impact guys right away. And I mean, we know their style of play. They're going to be pushing the envelope and putting the pressure on all three of the teams that they play and try and get these teams to conform to their style of play. So they are similar to, again, like George Mason stealing a game. I would not be stunned at all if Oklahoma comes out of here with at least 2 wins and a potential upset over Tennessee.
I think that the way Oklahoma plays kind of plays to the bigger ballpark. You know, playing in a big league stadium, you've got a lot of room to, you know, hit balls into the gaps and you can run. And Oklahoma's going to have a lot of fans in there, I would guess. It's pretty close to Arlington from Norman, and there are just a lot of alums in that area. So I think they could really benefit from the venue, from a number of, but both in terms of just like in the stands, the support they'll have, and there's familiarity, although that's true for all three of the Big 12 teams since they hold the tournament there. But also the pure dimensions of that ballpark, I think, play a little bit to what Oklahoma is trying to do offensively in terms of slashing and running and taking the game to you, as opposed to just waiting back and trying to hit home runs, which in a bigger stadium like that is a little challenging.
Yeah, no, I agree. And just looking at that lineup up and down, it's a super intriguing club, not only for this weekend, but as kind of a sleeper team, at least to start going through the year. Like Easton Carmichael, Jackson Nicholas, John Spikerman, that's a pretty big time trio that they have. And then they also bring in Sam Houston transfer Anthony McKenzie, and they have some really nice supplemental pieces in Kendall Pettis and Washington transfer Michael Snyder, who, again, you look at his season at Washington last year and there's maybe a little bit left to be desired, but he lit the world on fire in the New England Collegiate Baseball League. I think it was the summer of 2022 where he was the batting champion, but he's got tools. And then on the mound, Braden Davis is someone that I'm really, really excited about. I think that that's someone that they can be very happy with trotting out on Friday nights, and he can kind of be that anchor of the rotation. He's 91 and 94 from the left side with a legit plus changeup and then kind of a budding slider. I saw him a lot this summer. He was really impressive in the Cape League against the best talent college baseball has to offer. So I'm very, very excited to see how Oklahoma looks this weekend, especially in those first two games against Oregon and Tennessee, because, again, it's going to be a really good early barometer as to where they stand. But I, again, in a Big 12 that at least to start a preseason is TCU and everyone else, for lack of better phrasing. But I think Oklahoma is going to be in the mix for pretty much the entire season. At least they have a chance to.
The talent is certainly there. The opportunity is there, and that starts this weekend. Baylor, just coming off of a brutal season, they need something to go their way. I don't have a whole lot to say about Baylor. If they do something this weekend, I'll be excited to see what that looks like. But right now Baylor just needs to see some progress after a very difficult 2023. And Nebraska, you know, they've got Drew Christo back in the rotation this year. He was a really highly touted prospect coming into school. He's had some injuries, hasn't really worked out for him yet. But if he is able to take that step forward and be about what he was expected to be coming out of high school, that would be really exciting for Nebraska. And so that's something I'm going to be watching this weekend, is what Drew Christo and the rest of that Nebraska pitching staff can bring to the table.
Yeah, no, it's a serious arm talent. Like you said, he just hasn't quite put it together yet.
The other thing with Nebraska is they're replacing the whole left side of their infield. So there's another thing, or the middle of the infield rather, with Anderson and Bryce Matthews getting drafted in the top 50 picks. So a little bit of newness there, something to watch, especially in that noon game to kick things off against Baylor. If you're tuning in for one of those early games on Friday. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back with some of the more under the radar things to watch around the country this weekend. So stay here, and we'll be right back after a word from our partners.
Are you still searching for a great candidate for your company? Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with quality candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is how it makes hiring easy. It puts everything I need in one convenient location. I can communicate with candidates. I can set up interviews. I can send out messages just a couple of clicks. It makes it easy. And you are leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets for you. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast, including Baseball America. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Peter, let's go out west. You're going to be out west. You're going to be in Arizona. A variety of things happening in Arizona this weekend. You've got Northeastern traveling to Tucson to take on the Wildcats. You've got the MLB tournament in Scottsdale, which is interesting. And you've got a showdown on Friday night between Cal and Kansas State with a couple of high-level draft prospects. You've got Oregon State hosting their annual tournament in Surprise. Arizona State, Grand Canyon are at home as well. Just a lot happening. Since you're going, why don't you tell us what you're looking forward to out there?
Yeah, so my opening night is going to be spent watching K-State and Cal. Again, that's more of the draft prospect type of matchup. K-State, I think, is going to be a really quality club this year. But from a draft standpoint, on K-State's side, you've got Kalen Culpepper, shortstop, and Tyson Nabors, right-handed pitcher. Both are in a very good spot to be selected on the first day of the draft. Culpepper even in the first round. And then with Cal, you have Caleb Lomavita, the star catcher, and then Rodney Green Jr., an outfielder with all the tools. So that is where I will be on opening night. And then just looking at the tournament field in general, at some teams I'm excited about, I think it's hard to not be excited about USC, Southern California. Year one of the Andy Stankiewicz era was a resounding success, and they returned a ton of talent from last year's team, most notably outfielder Austin Overn, who led the country with 14 triples, Caden Aoki, who will be in contention to win Pac-12 Pitcher of the Year. He's a pitchability specialist, Bryce Martin, Grudzielanek, Ethan Hedges. There is talent everywhere. They bring in a big arm from Alabama and Brock Blatter. Really anywhere you look on USC from last year's team, they get almost all of their key contributors back. And then Grand Canyon is another team that I'm really excited about. They lost, obviously, Jacob Wilson, the sixth overall pick by the Oakland Athletics. But again, Zach York is one of the best pure hitters for sure in the 2025 draft class. But regardless of class, he's one of the best pure hitters in the country. Plus hit tool with above average power. I really like him. And then they're going to be relying on some young talent to step up, most notably Connor Madison, who earned a weekend role out of the fall, and then they bring back some talent in the bullpen with left-hander Grant Richardson. He's a power lefty with a mid-90s fastball, so they're always in contention and arguably the favorites to win the WAC, at least recently. And then Boston College is coming off of one of their best seasons in recent memory, arguably in school history, outside of that 2016 team that was a win away from going to the College World Series. But kind of like Nebraska, they do lose a ton of firepower from last year's team. They lose their most productive hitters in Travis Honeyman and Joe Vetrano. They lose a lot on the mound with Chris Flynn and Henry Leak. But on the plus side, they do get John West back, who emerged, for my money's worth, as their best arm down the stretch. They get him back, who will anchor the rotation on Friday nights. Nick Wing will make the shift from third over to first base. He's got a power right-handed bat. Cameron Leary has some thump in his left-handed bat. They return two regulars on the infield with Sam McNulty and Vince Cimini. So the Eagles will be intriguing this year. We did it with the ACC last year. We didn't have BC making a regional on our bingo card either. But this year, I would be even more surprised. They're going through a coaching change as well, which from this chair, I could not be more of a fan than the coach Todd Interdonato hire for BC. He built Wofford up into a powerhouse in the SoCon. He's an excellent recruiter. He's extremely respected in the baseball world. And I think that he is going to get BC and turn the Eagles into a perennial tournament type team. But I think that the field in general is an intriguing one. There are a lot of really solid teams. K-State and USC are the two I have circled from a talent standpoint and a longevity standpoint in terms of teams that could make a surprise tournament run, deep into June. But there will be no shortage of fun matchups out here. And then obviously with Northeastern and Arizona,
let me on BC. One thing that to look for this weekend, if you're checking them out, Todd Interdonato brings, or at least at Wofford, played a very aggressive style of game. Like, they run constantly. Like, they are going to absolutely take the game to you. And I'm just curious what that looks like at BC. He hasn't had a ton of opportunity to, you know, build the team exactly as he wants it. Like, he's inheriting players from Mike Gambino, who plays a different way of baseball, obviously. But I just want to see what, like, how much of what Wofford did BC is going to be doing, at least at the start of the season.
Yeah, that's a great point. They are in the, at least Wofford was in that Kentucky and Oklahoma school of pushing the pace. So I think that once Coach Innardonato starts to get his guys in there, you're going to see BC look a lot different. This year, maybe a little bit on a lesser scale, but I think going forward that they are going to be a really, I think for opposing teams, just a really, really pesky and annoying team to play against, quite frankly, because it's just going to be a lot of havoc wreakers and a lot of problem causers. But again, kind of in Tucson, Northeastern Arizona, Northeastern seems to be the popular preseason College World Series sleeper, but not so sleeper, I guess, pick, because everyone's picking them as their sleeper to make it to Omaha. But for good reason. They return really all of their firepower from last year's team that won a program record 44 games. Blue chip prospect Mike Sirota, he's got a chance to be the highest draft pick in school history. He'll be in center field. Tyler McGregor and Alex Lane, who led the team last year in home runs and RBIs respectively, they're both back. They've got a couple of picks to click offensively as well. And then on the mound, 2/3 of the weekend rotation is back with Avan Cabral and Wyatt Scotty, and then they'll seamlessly slide Jake Gigliotti in there on the in the Sunday role, who last year he had an 8-0 record, 65-17 K to walk ratio. I think that they're absolutely warrant earning of their preseason ranking and preseason expectations. I'm really curious to see how they handle that, at least in the first weekend, where they take on a tough Arizona team. So I'm really curious to see how they look and if they can win that opening series. I think that'd be a huge statement, because even though, you know, on paper, Northeastern is the ranked club, Arizona's unranked, Northeastern's getting all of this love, I think they would still make a big time statement for them to go out west and take at least 2 of 3 from the Wildcats.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, you're talking about a significant travel situation. You're talking about Arizona being at home, and Arizona has a lot of fans. And I don't really know what to expect from the Wildcats this year. I think Northeastern can absolutely go out there and do it. But, I mean, you're talking about a team that, I don't know precisely how much Northeastern has been outside this preseason, but I am positive Arizona's been able to do a little bit more in terms of on-field prep. So like this opening weekend, especially like that travel, just like the disparity in in weather between Tucson and Boston, it's a lot to ask. It's a big ask anyway of Northeastern this weekend, but I'm sure Mike Glavin will have his team ready, and there are going to be a lot of eyes from the scouting world on this one, because that is an outstanding opportunity to see Sirota against a Pac-12 team.
Yeah, in Arizona for the Wildcats, I know that they aren't getting as much love as obviously the Huskies are, and they might be a little bit slept on in the Pac-12, at least in their eyes, but they have a solid core offensively. The addition of Adonis Guzman behind the plate, he's actually a Boston College transfer. He's got one of the best throwing arms of any catcher in the country, for sure, in his class, in the 2025 draft class. And then also Mason White up the middle. The bat is very much for real with White. He's a Team USA type of guy. He had an absolutely berserk fall. They get Emilio Corona back in the outfield. So there are some key pieces in there. Again, it's the theme with so many of these clubs. I'm just really curious to see how they pitch. And Northeastern is a team that, I mean, they are super, super gritty and tough. Like, they will not kind of fold under the bright lights in this marquee matchup. I think that they're going to rise to the occasion. And, you know, even though they weirdly, I might be speaking out of turn and saying this, they're almost kind of the underdog still coming into this series, just because of, you know, what it is. So I think that if they can steal a series here early on, that's going to be a big time statement made from the Huskies that they are for real.
Yeah, I think whether they're actual underdogs or not, like I do think to go out and start your season that way would be pretty significant for them. Just because to get that kind of win on your resume right away, you have to assume Arizona is going to be solid. I don't know how good they're going to be this year. I don't know if that's going to be a tournament caliber series win. It might be, it might not be, but it's not going to be like, oh, well, you just beat the last place team in the Pac-12. Who really cares? Like, it's not going to be that situation either. So I do think it would be a significant start for Northeastern, no matter how you're looking at who's projected to win there. Let's stay out west. At this point, I think we've covered like the biggest things that are happening. I'm now moving on into just like things that intrigue me from around the country, things that I'm hoping to learn from. And I think there are a few opening weekend series in California that fit that bill. You've got Stanford hosting Fullerton. And we talked a lot about Stanford at the top of this. We might as well talk about them now. But Stanford's pitching staff looks radically different after last season. Fullerton is not as good as they were last year. At least they shouldn't be at the start of this season, because they are much, much more youthful than they were a season ago. A lot of turnover off of last year's NCAA tournament team. However, this is a pseudo rivalry. Like, they play this series every year. And it's an opportunity for us to get a look at Stanford's arms. So I'm just intrigued to see how exactly everybody lines up, what the freshmen look like, because we are going to get a look at some of those freshmen undoubtedly this weekend. So which of the highly touted freshmen stand out this weekend is something I'm intrigued there. UCLA has Gonzaga. Gonzaga is coming off of a down season, but UCLA is also coming off of a down season. So who's going to bounce back this weekend? Are UCLA's younger players that are, you know, going to be thrust into bigger roles now, are they going to be ready to go? So I'm intrigued by that. And then Washington is at Long Beach State. That's a little more under the radar, even by these standards. But UW coming off of a really successful first season under Jason Kelly, going down the road to Long Beach, which has a new coach, and just a lot of new themselves. But what UW needs to start strongly here. Like, they need to go out and win this series. But I just am intrigued because, like, you know, so many players from last season have moved on for the Huskies as well. Like, what is it going to look like in 2024?
Yeah, I think all three are intriguing. I think the one that I will probably be watching most close is the Stanford Fullerton matchup. You're more fluent in Fullerton than I am, but at least from a Stanford perspective, I mean, it's not just on the mound where they lose a lot. They lost Braden Montgomery to the transfer portal, Carter Graham, Eddie Park, Tommy Troy, Alberto Rios. They all got popped as well. Their rotation more or less got decimated, and so did its bullpen. So like right away, these highly touted freshmen are going to be thrown right into the fire. Christian Lim will be in the weekend rotation. Joey Volchko is going to be a key back end arm. Aiden Keenan figures to log a lot of innings. And they're going to need a lot of guys to step up. They return obviously Malcolm Moore and Owen Cobb, who will be two key cogs in the lineup. But outside of that, like, Trevor Haskins is going to really need to play up. Timo Becerra as well. And so will a number of these other pieces. Matt Scott, I know, is getting a lot of love preseason. And I know, you know, he knows, and the coaching staff knows, is that only means so much. You actually got to go out and do it. So, it's going to be a very new look Stanford team. But again, and what's become kind of the theme in the Coach Esker era, they find a way to win, and they find a way to win when it matters most. And it was funny on Twitter last night, someone in your replies to the Rintaro Sasaki news was like, Stanford doesn't win. And then I was so happy that you quipped back and you were like, well, they've been to Omaha three seasons in a row and no other team in the country can say that. And you're so right. Like, they go to the College World Series, how eighth grade classes go to Washington, D.C. Like, it's become a staple. But this will be I think, the toughest test for Coach Esker, at least in recent memory. And then also kind of looking elsewhere, one other series that piqued my interest was Santa Barbara and Campbell out in Boys Creek. I think that's a really one unique geographical matchup. Because you have
Hawaii, but that is, I think, the only series where somebody is traveling farther, and like that doesn't even count because somebody has to go to Hawaii every year. But like UCSB did not have to cross the country to go to Campbell, like, and they're returning it the following year. When I saw that this fall when it came out, I was like, I don't remember if I asked Justin Hare or Andrew Check, it's like, what's up with that? All I really got was like, well, there's a return next year, and I was like, well, that doesn't really explain like why you guys decided to do this. But that said, it's a really fun one.
Yeah, no, good point with the Rebs going to Hawaii. That is going to be hard to beat. But it's weird. It's almost a reversal. Usually it would be Campbell going out to Santa Barbara, but you have Santa Barbara traveling east. Again, Santa Barbara in the same breath as Northeastern. They had a solid year last year, but missed the tournament for the first time since 2019. They dropped their last four regular season games, but they did win 35 games. They were extremely competitive. Kind of like Northeastern, though, they are one of the more popular picks, at least in the Omaha sleeper realm. That rotation, I think, for my money's worth, is one of the more underrated rotations when you're talking about best rotations in the country. Obviously, you have your Wake Forest and Arkansas and Iowa, LSU. I think that UCSB is a slept on rotation. You've got Matt Agere back. Obviously he's the headliner. Mike Gutierrez will be a really quality guy on Saturdays, who's a pitchability lefty with good feel for a changeup. And then the X factor, I think, is Ryan Gallagher. And in 2022, Gallagher, he was the Big West freshman pitcher of the year. He had a perfect 8-0 record with a 3.2 ERA. And then the fact that they can trot an arm like Tyler Bremner out in presumably what will be a midweek starter role, that really speaks to their depth. He's got perhaps the most exciting raw stuff on the pitching staff. And then looking at the bullpen, Hudson Barrett is one of the best relief pitchers in the entire country. And like Gallagher was in 22, Barrett last year, he was the Big West freshman pitcher of the year. He was lights out with a sub-2 ERA. Logged 82 strikeouts. And then it's not just pitching with them. They have six of their top seven leading hitters from last year that are back. And Ivan Breitauer will be leading the charge with them. And then Campbell, you know, they are under Coach Justin Hare. They're in their first season in what is now, I think, the Colonial Athletic Conference. I don't know if
Coastal Athletic Association.
The Coastal Athletic Association. Okay. I knew I'd screwed up, but nonetheless, they lose firepower from last year. The two guys I have circled for them, though, Friday starter Derek Vartanian, he's a transfer from Gaston College. He had a super, super loud fall, mid-90s fastball, split change that's a plus pitch. He's, I think, a really quality arm for them. And then, obviously, the experienced Lawson Harrell, who last year he was the Big South Player of the Year. After hitting over 370 with 22 home runs, that he will be the anchor of that lineup. But they don't have as much preseason firepower, at least that they have in recent memory. But I mean, you talk about programs that know how to win and coaches that know how to win. Head coach Justin Hare fits that to a T. And so, I mean, this is going to be a really, I think, fun series. And if Campbell can come out of it, I think UCSB is the favorite heading into the weekend. But if Campbell can take a series from the Gauchos in week one, that's a heck of a way to start your season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is a, you know, with Campbell, you know, having the home field advantage, UCSB has to go a really long way. But I'm also just like, very interested in what UCSB has offensively. They were not a great offensive team last year. They returned a fair amount of it, but like they're going to have to be a little bit better this year. And Campbell is a, you know, they're going to have some good arms to throw at them. So I think it's a good, good test on opening weekend. So that is absolutely one to be watching. I'm also really intrigued by Oklahoma State and Sam Houston State. You know, we ranked Oklahoma State. They've They've got a lot of new, though. We're taking a little bit of a leap of faith with their pitching staff. And Sam Houston State is a team coming off of a regional appearance and is just a really solid program overall. So I think that's one to watch. And Air Force at Mississippi State. I am drawn to Mississippi State. I'm drawn to Starkville. Obviously, after two very disappointing seasons, there's a lot on this season. Like there's a lot of heat on everyone in Starkville right now. And Air Force comes in, and Air Force is a solid team that can hit really well. I'm just gonna say Sam K. I'm sorry. The last name.
Coolest Singham, I think.
There you go. Better you than me. But he's the he's a, you know, coming off of a Mountain West Player of the Year. You know, Air Force has a lot of experience and they can hit. So for a team in Mississippi State that has questions about their pitching staff, I think Air Force is going to be a good first weekend to see what this Mississippi State pitching staff is going to be able to do.
Yeah, that's a great call for kind of sleeper series of the weekend. I think it's more like, I think it's going to be a very good test and an underrated test at that for Mississippi State, and kind of a little bit of a prove it weekend early on. I think that I'd like to see out of them a resounding series win to be a little bit more bought in on them. And then one like deep cut, I guess, sleeper matchup for me. And it's an individual matchup in the Swig and Swine Classic in Charleston, I believe that's where it's being held. And it's Iowa and Ball State on Saturday. Iowa obviously getting a ton of love with the rotation. And presumably you'll see Marcus Morgan. And Ball State last year won the MAC tournament, and they return the MAC batting champion in Derek Scheffler, I believe his name is. Michael Hallquist was a big time Division II transfer addition who tore up the Northwoods League. And I think that they'll counter Morgan with Merritt Beaker, who hasn't seen a ton of innings. He's a transfer from East Carolina. He didn't see a ton of innings in Greenville, but he's a quality left-hander with a low to mid-90s fastball, quality secondary. I think that is going to be that's an underrated test for the Hawkeyes.
Let the record show, I did not put Peter up to mentioning my alma mater. Last one, then we'll wrap this one up, is USF, South Florida, is hosting a tournament with Louisville, UConn, and Indiana State. A lot of reasons to be intrigued by that. South Florida, this is probably a pretty important year for them, coming off of a down season after the Super Regional appearance in 2021. Louisville, of course, coming off of missing the NCAA tournament, Indiana State off of a super regional appearance, and UConn just kind of is just UConn, you know, like set your watch to Big East champion and probably in the top 25 at some point, UConn. So it's those four teams have often, at least a few of those teams have often matched up in this early season stuff. Three of those teams used to be in the American. Like there's a lot of knowing a lot of similarities in some of those programs, but I think that could be a really, that's where I'm going to spend part of my weekend. And I'm intrigued by just about all of those teams in there. And I really want to see what Louisville has coming off of last year's very disappointing finish.
Yeah. You talk about a prove it weekend. This is a great opportunity here for Louisville, like you said, to bounce off what was a really down year last year. It's going to be a little bit of a new look club. They've got a handful of transfers coming in on both sides of the baseball, a couple of key returners. I think the one guy I have circled that's going to, I think, be one of the leaders offensively is shortstop Gavin Keelan. He's got a really good feel to hit. Short, quick, left-handed swing with advanced feel for the barrel. I think that he is a guy that will emerge. Eddie King Jr. is a fun player. And then looking at the rotation, it's going to take on a little bit of a new look, but I'm pretty convinced and bought in on at least two thirds of it with Sebastian Gongora. He's a Wright State transfer. He won Horizon League Pitcher of the Year last year. That's someone I know, and the coaching staff probably feels similarly, that you can feel really confident in trotting out there every Friday night. He's an experienced guy. really knows how to pitch. He's a strike thrower. I know that they're excited about him. And then in the back end, Carson Liggett, he was really good last year. 7-2 record, 3.4 ERA. He's got a good arm. And then kind of the X factor is Patrick Forbes, who has kind of been thrust into a weekend role. Only threw 9 and a third innings last year, but he's got a huge arm. He's got a fastball that's been up to 96, as well as a curveball that's really flash. But they're like, I know that they're excited. There are still some question marks about how this Louisville team, you know, exactly is going to perform. But there is reason for excitement, and I think that there's going to be reason for even more excitement if they can take 2 of 3 from, you know, a weekend that will feature matchups against Indiana State, South Florida, and UConn. So this is a very big, big weekend for Louisville.
Yeah, absolutely. And 3 really solid opponents for Louisville and for the rest of them. Like all of those games should be solid games throughout the weekend there in Tampa. So that's what to watch. That's a lot to watch. But like we said, there's not one thing this weekend. It's really a weekend to, you know, let your eyes wander. Try and take in as much as you can. That's what opening weekend is about this year anyway, is just gather, watch whatever you want to watch, gather as much information as you can, and, you know, we'll find the big time series later in the season. This weekend should just be a fun weekend for college baseball, really, no matter where you decide to look. So we'll be back here to discuss that on the Baseball America College Podcast next week. So make sure you're subscribed to the Baseball America Podcast on your favorite podcasting app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. I still miss Stitcher. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Peter's at Peter G. Flaherty. We will be providing thoughts throughout the weekend there. And then over at baseballamerica.com, there will be a new top 25 for the first time on Monday. So make sure to check that out and let us know what's wrong. I'm sure you will in comments or on Twitter or both. So we look forward to that. That's part of what the season is all about. So enjoy this weekend of college baseball, everyone. I know Peter will. I know I will. And we're just excited to have the season back. So buckle in. We've got a great ride ahead of us in this 2024 season. So for Peter, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next time.